All right, so now that we've been recording for a little while, we're going to start wrapping up and transitioning over to another little topic that you've indicated an interest in, on paramedic peer support and on looking after each other and looking after our colleagues and looking after ourselves. So a few months ago now, you wrote a blog post on pre-hospital research titled, What Can Happen When We Ask Our Colleagues If They Are Okay? And it went absolutely crazy throughout Twitter and on Facebook as well. I saw it pop up on my newsfeed for probably a good solid week after the post first went up. And it opened a good dialogue on Twitter between a number of people about talking to our friends at work, talking to our colleagues, and just, you know, checking that they are okay. So what really kind of brought that on in you? What made you stand up and write that blog post?
I actually have had four people I know decide who suicided in the last 12 months. And I guess coming back from SMAC, and it was something that I'm quite passionate about, I know of too many paramedics and student paramedics who struggle with depression, struggle with anxiety issues, you know, throwing their bit of post-traumatic stress from some of the jobs that they've attended in their careers. And it has been said, and I am still trying to find the literature, that paramedics have one of the highest suicide rates within Australia as a profession, higher than average. And that worries me. You know, we have to look at why and what it is. And when I was on placement, I was lucky enough to actually talk to quite a few paramedics one-on-one, just quietly. And I brought the topic up with them as to, you know, how they deal with things and what affects them the most and what consequences it's actually had on their life. And it's quite interesting that a lot of them, I didn't really expect honest answers, especially coming from the guys, but most of them were actually honest. And they would tell me about the pediatric arrests or the child abuse cases or, you know, horrendous car accidents out the highway, Christmas, the whole family's packed in there to go home and they're all just wiped out with one car. And, you know, these people never make it to the emergency department. They, you know, the coroner comes and attends them instead. And it's something that stays with them a lot, especially when, you know, the amount of mental health cases we're actually going to, you know, is extraordinarily high and it's just increasing. And the amount of attempted and completed suicides that we're attending is just increasing as well. As, you know, I said in the blog, you know, we now have the highest suicide rate that we've had in 10 years in Australia, and it's not good enough. And I guess so, I think that when you attend those jobs and you see how others are suffering and how others are being affected by their own lives, it probably does brush off a little bit onto the paramedics. And one of them had spoken about a pediatric arrest that he attended in his small area. The child went to school with his own son. He knew this child quite well, and he was the first responder on the single response unit car. You know, they could never get the child back, and it really affected him. And when I spoke to him, we're talking probably over 10 years later, and that arrest still affects him. He started getting flashbacks. He started getting you know, hearing the mother screaming when he went to bed at night. He would, you know, every arrest that he would go to, even if it was an adult, he suddenly started getting quite panicky and feeling all that, you know, that sick in the stomach. He didn't want to go to work. He started drinking more than he would normally and became quite depressed. And I think that's a thing we need to look at as to why. What are we doing? You know, are we actually debriefing properly? And I asked him, well, didn't the ambulance service, you know, give you anything? Didn't they spend some time trying to help you through? And he said, yeah, no, I had, you know, that obligatory counselling session 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it. And however, 10 years on, it still affects him. So I think we need to look at as to when we attend critical incidents, what's been done long term outside that first few days of people going, hey, mate, how are you coping? How are you holding up? We need to ask people 6 months down the track, a year down the track, because those things do stay with us. You know, I remember some nasty jobs when I was a nurse, and you know, one particular arrest of an adult, and she was, like, you know, almost 80. She had dementia, But it was a horrendous arrest and nothing went right. And I went out and got, you know, completely drunk that night. And I was just, no, there was no proper debrief. And it really affected me for quite a while. And the same with pediatric things. You know, these things traumatise us. It's not normal. People don't understand what it is we do in healthcare, what we see, you know, the sounds we hear. I will never forget the scream of a mother that lost her twin boys. And it was horrendous, you know, and I still can actually see that mum's face and hear her cries. And those things stay with us. And so we need to ask each other, are they okay? You know, do you want to have a chat? Do you want to go over what happened that day or that night and start looking after each other? When we ask each other if they're okay, we need to be prepared for the fact that they may go, you know what, I'm actually not doing all right. You know, things are pretty crappy right now. And we don't have to fix their problem. It's not our job, but we can listen. We can refer them on to someone else. Go, do you want me to just come with you for that first, you know, appointment? So get rid of all the nerves. Like, you know, we need to wipe out this blokey machoism and actually look after each other, because life can get tough.
And I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be an on-the-job factor that's affecting you. It could be something from your personal life that just isn't sitting right with you as well. We have a stressful job.
Yeah.
Life is stressful enough. You can't be taking that to work, and you can't be bringing work home. I mean, but sometimes you feel that you can't reach out for help. That my service is particularly good. We have a wonderful system of short-term counselling.
Yeah.
Our managers follow up with us. We're doing it really right when it comes to peer support.
That's
we have
awesome.
Frontline peer support officers. We have chaplaincy. We have everything you could want in a time of mental crisis is there. So that's something I am very proud of in our service. But on Twitter particularly, the conversation drew back to a lot of student paramedics and how they were attending the same jobs as us, as us paid responders, but they had nowhere near the access to professional help that we had. And a lot of the time it was being thrown back at me when I was suggesting on Twitter, I'm like, you need to build your own support network.
Yeah.
You need to, if no one's doing something for you, you need to do it for yourself. You need to ask the question, why can't we have this? If you're a student, you need to be going to your student paramedic association, or your student union, if you're a member of them, and asking, you know, why can't we have short-term counselling available for our paramedics, you know?
I think it's one of those things.
And you need to encourage the attitude as well.
Yeah,
of definitely. Just that lateral attitude where you can...
Change the walk culture.
Yeah, exactly. Where you can walk up to anyone in your course that you know and you can talk to them about what you've done, about what's bothering you.
Yeah.
And we really need to get away from this one-man island kind of idea that we have.
I think that's right. I mean, I was lucky, I think, in that I didn't have any, you know, massively traumatic incidents. I did see a man who shot himself, and I didn't attend the job, but I was certainly there and waiting when he came into emergency and saw, you know, what happened in recess, and that he... And that was quite... It was interesting in that I didn't know how I would react seeing that actually physically, and I didn't react the way I thought I would, and I actually coped a lot better. But I think also, you know, we were waiting for that patient for a while, and I sort of got, you know, to start talking to others about it. But I think, you know, student paramedics, we do, as Mitch said, you know, we need to look after each other, and if something happens, you know, maybe we could start talking to our unis. If the course coordinator hears it, or someone from one of the lecturers here that we've attended a nasty job, give the student a call, because sometimes the student may just be feeling that they can't actually reach out, they can't call and say, I've had a really crappy job and now I can't sleep for a week. Like, whilst we need to change the culture, we also need to start reaching out to people. You know, we take responsibility for each other as well as ourselves. And I guess the thing with that is you need to be honest, because I know that many would be asked, are you doing okay? And they're really not. They're really being torn up inside, but they're ashamed or they're worried about being stigmatized, whatever. by saying I'm not okay. So we need to be honest with each other. And as I said, like, it may start a conversation that you never thought you would ever have and find that someone else isn't doing okay as well.
And in that, we need to build a culture of confidence as well.
Yeah.
If someone's talking to you about their problems, you can't take that to anyone.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, unless it's something that you really need to intervene on.
Yeah.
Unless it's a safety issue, unless it's an issue where you think this person may be at risk of self-harm yeah. or suicide, it needs to be a conversation that happens in confidence. And yeah. you can't talk about it in the hallway, you can't talk about it on station, you can't send a text message to anyone. It's just got to stay between you two.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there needs to be confidence, and I guess if you feel that you need to intervene on someone, that you may give them the heads up and say, look, I just feel like I need to go and talk to him. It could just be the counsellor, because they're also bound by confidentiality and they're better trained than maybe your station officer to decide what needs intervention and what doesn't, and do that. But definitely, if you actually open up to someone, and it can take a lot of guts, especially for, you know, men to do that, and someone that gets blabbed around the station, it's not good. You know, it's not going to help that culture that we need to change. We need to look out for each other. It's
definitely, yeah. definitely. And we need to build that network. If you don't have a peer support network at your university or at your service, you need to build that peer support network. It's all in the name, really. You don't have to have any special training.
No.
It just value adds. All you need to be is someone that's willing to listen and someone that's willing to just be a wall. But if you're taking that peer support role on, you also need to think about yourself. You can't absorb everything that people are going to give to you and not have someone to talk to yourself. So the peer support system needs to work all around. It can't just be a linear structure where everything gets dumped on the top person, on the one person that's willing to listen.
And this is also, you know, something I wrote about, is that if you're the paramedic and you are attending a really nasty job with, and you have a student on board, just later that shift, say, can I grab your number? I just want to give you a call in a week. And, you know, whilst the paramedics themselves, they'll be sorting out their own peer support amongst themselves, be aware that your student may not actually have access to that. And if they do have access to, say, counselling service through the university, that counsellor may not be trained in, you know, traumatic events, etc. They're probably just a university counsellor that deals with, you know, finances, family, love, relationships. And they may not have actually counselled someone before that just went and saw a whole family wiped out on the way home from the Christmas holiday, and what that would have appeared to, you know, to the student. So that could just be an amazing, amazing show of peer support by grabbing their number and giving them a call. And if you still think after then that, you know, things are struggling, send them a text in 3 months' time or whatever. Like, just because those things will affect you. And, you know, we all hear about paramedic burnout. If, I think if we're letting our students burn out while they're still training because they don't have the ability to process that themselves and to know what normal reactions are and not normal reactions are, they're going to burn out a lot faster.
Definitely. When you were talking about seeking professional help and feeling kind of ostracised by, you know, maybe you're not seeing a counsellor that's had a lot to do with trauma, I think that's why sometimes we feel better talking to people in our degree or people in our workplace.
Yeah.
Because we know in our mind that they've been through the exact same circumstances. They understand the trials of our job. Whereas yeah. a counsellor may have just the public perception of a paramedic's job and not really understand how it can affect us on the human side.
I think one of the things that absolutely, I mean, when Alan Batt approached me and asked me whether I'd be interested in starting writing for the pre-hospital blog, was that no one's going to read my stuff, you know, like that's just ridiculous.
How wrong you were.
You know, no, like I'm just some tiny paramedic student out in Australia, no one really cares. And one of the reaction to that piece blew me away. The reaction affected me more than it did writing it. Alan told me probably within about the first 6 days it had had over 4,500 individual views, and I know that it had another spike about a week later, and a couple of weeks this week I posted it again because of something that happened in Australia. And So it then got reshared again. And what people didn't see, though, was the amount of emails and messages on Twitter and Facebook and other ways of contacting me from around the world. Like, I'm talking probably 50 to 100 messages that were telling me about their colleagues' suicide or depression, or their own battle with depression, PTSD, anxiety, and how they don't, you know, they themselves started thinking about suicide. It was quite a daunting and overwhelming week, because if you can imagine, I mean, I don't know how trauma counselors do it. I don't know how those that constantly listen to others' horrible stories cope, because that week was just really exhausting. I felt really numb. I felt really negative, and all that, all these terrible stories from people around the world was just, I didn't know how to react to it. Mm. You know, I was, you know, I just kept reassuring people, thank you for sharing your story, etc. But it was, what it reiterated to me is that we don't talk about this enough. There are so many people that say, you know, you hit the nail on the hammer with how I felt and what the issue was, and that, you know, you had that obligatory debrief, you know, a couple of days after. But after that, it's like you're meant to get on and forget about it. And it really reiterated to me that we're not talking about this. It's not culture to actually ask people if they're okay and to look after each other long term. And I think that, you know, that's, I guess, if anything, the reaction to the piece showed more than what was written in it.
Hi guys, just Mitchell Thomas here to finish up this podcast. This is a section I cut out of the chat that Jess and I had a couple of weeks back. I felt that this topic was important enough that it warranted its own 15-minute session, as opposed to being lumped in to the entire other talk. I felt that I really wanted to highlight a lot of the stuff that's said here, because Jess has some really good ideas on mental health in providers. What I'd like to know from some of the listeners out there is what kind of mental health services your service offers you, if there's any provided mental health services, or if you really have to go and get it off your own back. If you can reply to me on the comments section of the blog, want to ask any questions, make any comments, just come over to the comments section of the blog. Or alternatively, you can find me on Twitter along with Jess. She goes by @EMS_junkie. On Twitter, I go by @JRParamed on Twitter. So you can contact us there as well. To everyone out there, a huge thanks for listening, and I bid you good night as I'm coming off night shift at 9:30 in the morning.